Attorney General Eric Holder announces his resignation. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg says she will not retire. A U.S.-led coalition launches airstrikes against ISIS in Syria. And President Obama gets flack from Republicans and support from Democrats after an awkward salute. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will cover these national issues and more in this edition of The Week in Review. In Wisconsin, a federal court lifts an injunction on the John Doe investigation and says the matter belongs in state courts. The Wisconsin Police Association endorses Mary Burke, saying crime has gone up in Wisconsin due to Governor Walker's cuts. What do you think about these issues, and what topics would you like to discuss in this edition of our Week in Review, where we cover the top state and national and international news in politics with two guests from different perspectives? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Margaret Farrow is with us. She's a former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, a former state lawmaker. She's also a member of the UW System Board of Regents. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Eugene Kane is with us as well, a columnist and blogger from Milwaukee. His writings appear on Sundays in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, Attorney General Eric Holder says he's had enough. He's announced his resignation. Your reaction, Eugene?
It was a shocker. Yeah, I think it was yesterday morning when I first started hearing about it, and I really do think that it was striking to me that he meant a lot, particularly to African Americans I know, because along with Obama being the first African American president, he's the first African American U.S. Attorney General. So I think during the time that he was in, he made a profound effect because there were so many stories that seemed to center around civil rights and even racial issues that for the first time in memory, we had black people had an attorney general who basically could relate his experiences as a black man in America. So without getting too weighty about it, I just think it was more than just another member of Obama's cabinet resigning or just deciding to step down. It was really significant in terms of the historic achievement of African Americans in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Margaret.
Well, I think I agree with Eugene. I was surprised. We had heard mention, he had kind of hinted at that some time back. You would hear him say something, but nothing to the point of, I am about to resign, I'm going to retire from this position. And I think that he certainly has served the president well. There's no question about that. I would think that on the matter of law, he has, I think, politicized it to a great extent in the way he has carried or implemented what he should be doing. And I think that he is... he certainly will be missed by some and not by others in the country. I would like to think we could get to the point where our office holders, certainly at that level, represent all the people and not just some. And I think we've had experience with that. And we've had experience, not that, as Eugene is implying, I would say there are cases perhaps where there's some legitimate concerns, but we have to have in that seat in justice someone who is ready to look at the law and how it truly impacts our people.
Holder.
Well, I don't think it's a blanket agreement by everybody that Holder was a politically motivated person. I think a lot of his decisions seem to stem from just basically a knowledge of the reality of life in the United States for many groups. So I would just sort of like to throw that in because a lot of people try to make it seem as though everybody hated Holder, but I don't think that was the case. He did a lot of good things.
We are talking with Eugene Kane and Margaret Farrow on this edition of The Week in Review. If you would like to join us, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What do you think about the announced resignation of Attorney General Eric Holder? Well, here's another story related, but it's Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg says she won't retire for the last year. Liberals have called on Supreme Court Justice Bader Ginsburg to step down from the high court so that President Obama can appoint her successor, fearing that if a Republican becomes president in 2017, that Ginsburg's seat will go to a conservative, and the already conservative court will move further to the right. Ginsburg says that she's not going anywhere. Eugene, do you think it would be better if she retired under Obama, or do you think that she should stay?
I have to say, Joy, in reference to being very honest and personal, I would have to know Justice Ginsburg personally to get a sense of whether she is, you know, someone who is just sort of digging in her heels, or someone who I would think probably does have a lot still to offer. I guess I'm just saying, I think it's a real flip thing to sort of say, is she like an elderly person who's just trying to hang on to her job, or is it really time for her to go? I would like to have a lot more personal insight into her personality, her recent judgments and writings. So I'm sort of begging off on that, but
yeah,
that's the way
it's
okay. I look at it.
Ginsburg said even though Democrats control the White House and the Senate, Republicans can still block a nominee to the Supreme Court that they feel is too liberal. So she's saying stepping down doesn't necessarily mean that.
I understand her case in terms politically. I'm just saying, in making a personal judgment, I don't think anybody should just hold on to something because of politics.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I think, first of all, she was appointed by Clinton, and I think you are appointed to the Supreme Court for the remainder of your life, or your productive life, and or until you die unexpectedly, as we've also experienced. I think she has every right to stay there. I think she is correct in that though the Democrats changed some of the filibuster blocking rules, they did not remove the filibuster blocking ability for people in the minority to stop to hold up the appointment of a Supreme Court justice. So she was kind of putting a dash of reality on the fact that even though we still have a Democratic Senate right now, and we're not sure what's going to happen in November, this level appointment still can be under the old rules where the minority party had some degree of strength in making these type of decisions. And I think those, certainly she's been very strong on women's issues, as I understand her record. And I'm sure those individuals who experienced her support and that sort of thing would say they're glad she's still staying there. I think it's in her own prerogative to say she can stay. She is wanting to stay, and I don't know. She may have had some back talks with the behind-the-scenes talks with the president to explain her position, or maybe she, you know, we never know what else is being said around the corners. But I think she has every right to stay there.
Well, let's talk about this week. We saw the first airstrikes in Syria in the fight against ISIS, or the group that calls itself the Islamic State. Margaret Farrell, your reaction to a U.S.-led coalition, not just the U.S., taking on ISIS with military strikes in Syria?
Well, I think I look at why things happen when they do. We originally took very strong action against Al-Qaeda after the World Trade Towers and after America was attacked, and we knew terrorists were rampant on the planet to an extent to threaten people here, there, or anywhere. And that visible affront and attack and horrible thing moved us to move in a way that created our getting in there and trying to make sure the battle is over there and not here against that type of terrorism. I think we saw the same thing happen here. I think we have a president now who does not like war. He has made that clear. He received the Nobel Peace Prize as he went into office with statements he had made prior to taking office. So he doesn't want to fight, and he tries to avoid it in his mind with good reason. All right, now suddenly we see two Americans beheaded. Then we see a British gentleman beheaded. We see this terrible terrorist actions, and the video drove, you know, being received into the homes of the United States, I think prompted him to have to take strong action. Will we ever solve the problem over there? I don't think so. Will we try to keep it from affecting the security of our countrymen and those of our allies? I think that's what we're trying to do, is, again, keep the battle over there, contain it, and make sure we don't have terrorism brushing up on our shores or those of our allies.
Mm-hmm. Eugene?
Well, looking at it, I have concern at the way all this started, because I think I agree with Margaret in reference to Americans, American politicians, American media were sort of terrorized into what I call a warmongering almost phase, where you basically saw it on your evening news shows and the Sunday panel shows, all these pundits talking about we need to take action. And what do you know? A few weeks later, we're at war. I do think Obama was kind of browbeaten into doing this by his critics again, who probably going to find something wrong with this eventually, because they always find something wrong with his strategy. But I totally understand how afraid people are of terrorism. I certainly do think they ratcheted up the terror spectrum or level in the last month or so for reasons that were connected to the beheadings, but I don't know if it was totally about that. And ISIS, it just seemed like a campaign, again, almost going back to 9/11 in 2001. It's almost like there are people who are driving us to take action and to go to war and use military war machines, and I'm concerned about that, because I don't claim to have any insight or knowledge about these groups. ISIS is something that, like a lot of Americans, I don't think I became really familiar with them until a couple months, and evidently the government has known about them for years. So I'm just concerned whenever we go to war like this, because I know we're not getting the true fact, all of the facts. We're just getting a little slither. And when it seems to be just a political reaction to something, that concerns me.
So what is your reaction to the start of U.S.-led airstrikes in Syria against the Islamic State? Your reaction to the announced resignation of Attorney General Eric Holder? We'll talk about, when we come back, we will also talk about the so-called latte salute. And we'll welcome your thoughts on that as well. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Week in Review, a roundup of the top stories in politics in the past week, internationally, nationally, and in the state of Wisconsin. What happened in the news this week that caught your attention, that you want to talk about? You can bring up a subject as well. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We have with us two guests from different perspectives, Eugene Kane, who is a columnist and blogger from Milwaukee, and Margaret Farrow, a former Republican lieutenant governor of Wisconsin and a former state lawmaker. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Margaret Farrow and Eugene Kane today. And you, too, if you want to weigh in on the issues making news, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Well, you know what? Our phone lines filled up as soon as I said a latte salute. So apparently, even though a lot of people are saying this is a non-story, it sure has people talking. The social media went wild, and just about every other media outlet picked up on a video that the White House actually released of the president getting off a helicopter, and he had a cup of coffee in his hand. Actually, it was a cup of tea, I understand. And he saluted with his right hand and the cup of tea, styrofoam or paper cup, in his hand. He saluted the Marine that was at the foot of the stairs. And lots of Republicans, especially, said this is an outrage. This showed disrespect. A lot of Democrats said, "Hey, this is no big deal. If you want to criticize Obama, what about George W. Bush saluting with his dog Barney in hand?" So, I know Eugene, you've written about this issue. What's your take?
Well, I think it's just another indication just how differently this president is treated by the media and his opponents at this particular time in history. Because I know things change. Things have changed in the media with, you know, social media and Twitter and Facebook. So to tell the truth, a lot of that wasn't really happening when George Bush was president. And so his mishaps and his little snafus, and Lord knows he had a lot of them, they weren't documented as much as Obama's have been. But still yet, the degree to which conservative media, right-wing media in particular, and then it's picked up by these conservative politicians, the way that they jump on every little thing and blow it out of proportion, and the mainstream media takes the bait and turns it into part of the 24-hour news cycle, and even longer sometimes, is just discouraging to me. And I think it's just another indication why I think people who wonder why some people who support Obama claim that he is always under attack and he's always being made, you know, people are always making everything too big a thing out of every little thing he does. This is a perfect indication of why people think that about this president.
Mm-hmm. Margaret?
Well, I think we've got to think about, certainly I would agree that we have a new media and all, but I look back, Eugene, I'm sure you can remember it. I can remember Gerald Ford being shown several times for clumsy things that happened, getting out of a plane, falling at a bowling alley where he was doing a little bowling with some friends as a public event. And yes, he was probably the best athlete we've had in the White House in a long time, but he had these clumsy moments, and they were all over the press. We know with all of our presidents, there are things that happen, gaffes that happen, statements that are made that are, you know, held up. Why? Because they're a symbol of something. They're at the very top of our country. They're the international symbol of what America is and what we should be believing in. And I think many of us were discouraged right from almost the get-go of this president's term, the first term, when he neglected to go, for example, to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier on Memorial Day, a tradition that had been respected by presidents for a long time. And somebody finally got to him, because since that first year, when he didn't even say where he and his family were, now he has been there. And I think it's, how does he respect our American traditions? How does he respect what we do in terms of the flag, in terms of our patriotism? And this is kind of just one more thing. It was very careless. His left hand was completely free. He could have had the cup in that hand. I saw it on Facebook first. So I'm right with that new 24/7 way to find things out. But I thought it, with this Marine representing the Marine tradition of just so much loyalty to this country, to kind of brush off that very formal salute that was being given.
Well, still, not to be disrespectful, but if you're on the media, if you're on social media now, you must have been able to find numerous pictures now that have been posted of various presidents doing sloppy and clumsy salutes. So, and now to suggest that, you know, I don't think for a minute President Obama is anti-American or doesn't respect American traditions. I thought we had done away with all that nonsense before. I think he was caught in a clumsy moment coming off a plane, and like many other presidents, he wasn't keeping in mind how everything I do is going to end up as part of the 24-hour news cycle. But to even suggest that this is an indication that he has a pattern of not respecting the military or not respecting American tradition. What, were we going back to the days of saying he's a Muslim now, or what?
I hope you're right, Eugene, with all my heart, believe me.
What do you mean, Margaret?
Well, I mean, I hope he's right, but I don't know what his attitude was toward our country in the times he was with Bel Ayers in his living room. I don't know where he was historically teaching in law schools, where he seems now. I'm wondering if I had taken his constitutional law and if I had had the chance to become a lawyer, which I thought I wanted to do at one point, that's what I would have studied. I would have gone into constitutional law. I'm just wondering where where he formulated the ideas he has been carrying forward these 5 years, because I think he brings a different attitude toward many things that traditionally have been looked at in a different way in this country.
Let's take a call. Tom in Madison.
You know, from this coffee cup or this teacup incident. See, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I think it's an amazing leap to make from showing him with one-handed one-handed clumsy salute to the fact that there's something in his background now that suggests he's un-American. I'm glad you brought it out there, because I think a lot of people I know have always thought that's the way Obama's opponents think about him. So I'm glad it's been confirmed on that level at least.
Eugene, I think we are what we grow to be. I think a lot of what I am, I grew out of the classrooms at Marquette University. I don't think it just happened now. I think what papers I wrote in college would show kind of where I was being formulated to what I am. We've never seen his papers. We don't know his formulation, and that's, I think, a concern.
Let me bring in Tom in Madison. What is your comment, Tom?
Good morning. The troops are required. They're under obligation to salute our commander-in-chief. The commander-in-chief, particularly if he's not a veteran, is not obligated to salute at all. Maybe his Freudian slip was showing and that it was a Tea Party salute. I don't know. But, again, it's just manufactured false outrage. You know, people can debate this for hours and hours on TV, liberal, conservative, both. But they can't debate equal pay for women anymore. I mean, it just blows my mind, the distractions. You know, distract us with BS while they rob us blind. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
Thank you, Tom. So, Margaret, what about? I mean, it was a clumsy. You know, maybe he could have put the cup in his other hand. But is it worth the? The outrage, is it worth talking about this issue and not other issues?
Well, let me put it this way, Joy. I didn't bring it up. It was one of the issues on your list.
No, I just mean it's a national conversation because
right,
of the
I
outrage.
Think the media creates it, and I think Eugene and I would agree that 24/7 news cycles are not a healthy thing, and do nitpick and do get into details that we ought to just not bother to put in our brain at all. And I was asked for a reaction, and I gave it. But I think, I guess it's a very hard thing these days to be a public official, and the higher you go, the harder it is.
Mm-hmm. Eugene?
Because of that.
Well, I think the media is at fault because it buys into this stuff. And it also shows, I mean, where their priorities are. There's no way this would be as much a talked about story if it hadn't been run many times. Fox News is usually the biggest perpetrator, but you can't say it's just Fox News. It's other news stations as well. They contribute to this as well. And we end up being, like the caller said, diverted while something else is happening that we probably should be paying more attention to.
Well, you know, we'll move on to other issues, but I will. It's interesting. We have full lines still with people who want to say one thing or another about this particular.
I think that's my point. It says a lot about the way some people have views of Obama, because they're now extrapolating the great coffee cup or as you broke the news, the tea, what is it, tea latte? Is there a sort of tea latte?
I think there might be, but yeah, that's at least Time Magazine was reporting that the president prefers tea, and so they believe it was really tea in the cup.
See, that destroys the narrative in a way, doesn't it, Joy?
Well, we will move on to other issues. So, let me just ask you this though. But first, both of you, is this issue over, or do you consider this one of those ones that is going to stay on the 24-hour news cycle for a while, Eugene?
I think the photo of Bush saluting with his dog pretty much put an end to anybody trying to really make real hay out of this. Because once you put that out enough, it does. Sort of. Then you get in a debate of, well, which was the least disrespectful, the dog or the cup? So
yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's over.
It's over, Margaret?
in El Salvador.
I hope so. I think we have much more concern about the hostages that are still being held by ISIS and things of that level and that proportion of seriousness, and I hope that's where we focus.
Yeah. Well, when President Obama was at the UN General Assembly this week talking about ISIS, and he also told a United Nations meeting on Tuesday that pollution must be contained to address climate change. He specifically called out China, saying that the most popular country on Earth must join the U.S. and lead the rest of the world in carbon reduction. There was also this week, 400,000 people or something like that were marching in New York to demand action to stop climate change. Margaret Farrow, is the president right about this issue?
I guess my concern would be, I think there's a valid concern for our water, the quality of our water in the planet. There are areas I know that we all understand in the Atlantic Ocean where if you go kind of where the plastics of the world settle on the surface, you can actually see them, large expanses of the ocean where they're in the North Atlantic where that is the case. And having sailed a lot on Lake Michigan, I know what gets in that poor lake and how long it takes to clear it by nature. But I think that that's, we know we throw things away and that's wrong. We know we're not recycling enough of the things we could recycle, and that's a real concern. Our state certainly is concerned about phosphorus and other things of that type and getting in our waterways. I don't buy into the science that we as human beings are having a huge impact on our planet. This planet has gone through a lot of dynamic changes historically, and if you study any historical geology, you know that. And you then couple it with meteorology, and you really, your eyes are opened. We certainly have a responsibility not to, in our own lives, not to harm things unnecessarily. But I don't think as human beings we're changing that much. China certainly, where so much is being produced now, for all sorts of reasons, and the whole Pacific Rim do not have the concerns of air pollution and what have you, and they're paying the price with their cities being plagued by smog. Let them deal with that, because it ultimately does have some effect on us, but nobody is around to affect the planet when the dinosaurs disappeared. What caused that? So I think we have a responsibility, yes. Are we almost thinking we're overly important to the health of every thing that we do has an impact on the planet? I think that's over-exaggerated.
Eugene?
Well, like a lot of people, I was struck by the march in New York, which had estimates of 400,000 people, which is a lot of people, and didn't really get much coverage, even if people see the mainstream media as being this liberal propaganda machine. I was surprised that I really had to search for any news about that march. But it did confirm to me that regardless what people think, there are a lot of people still concerned about this. I've been more slowly brought onto the idea that this is a pretty pressing problem, man-made climate change, which is us and the people in this generation who have been oblivious to the impact that all the technological advancements of the last, 50 years or so have really changed the ball game in a lot of ways. Man and woman before a certain point did not have the capacity to create the kind of industries and build the kind of structures that do have a negative impact on our planet. So even though I do agree the planet is a mighty thing and can survive a lot of stuff, why would you ignore the warning signs, the obvious scientific warning signs that have told us that there is climate change, and it's not a fantasy, and it's not, just one person's belief? Why would you ignore that? So my sense is that I was glad to see more focus. I was glad to hear Obama speak about it at the UN. So let's keep in that. Let's, continue in that direction.
Well, one more national story before we move on to politics in the state of Wisconsin, and just a quick react to the story earlier this week that a a man scaled the fence at the White House, ran across the lawn, and opened a White House door before he was stopped. He was armed with a knife. What do you make of that, Margaret Farrell?
I guess I'm shocked. I don't know what in heaven's name happened to the lapse of the Secret Service, the perimeter defenses that are up in that area, the snipers on the roof that are always there. Apparently, they're not at night. I don't think any of us can believe what happened, and I think the Obamas, as the residents of that, should be very concerned. And please, someone lock the door.
I think they're going to lock the door now. Eugene, your take?
Well, yeah, I agree. It's just alarming. You don't expect that to happen. And, you know, the more cynical or the more paranoid African-Americans I know have questioned, why is it that the Secret Service always seems to have these lapses now that they're guarding a black president? So I don't want to go that far. But if it keeps up, people will have concerns as to why this president all of a sudden is having a problem with his Secret Service protection.
We will move on to news going on in the state of Wisconsin, including a federal appeals court overturning a lower court's ruling on that halted the John Doe investigation. And we'll talk about some other news in the race for governor in Wisconsin. Talking with Margaret Farrow and Eugene Kane during this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today to Margaret Farrow, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, a former state lawmaker, a member of the UW System Board of Regents, and Eugene Kane, a columnist and blogger from Milwaukee. His writings appear on Sundays in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We are talking about the top stories of the week and welcoming your input. What happened in the news this week that you want to talk about? You can bring up a topic, you know. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We're going to talk about issues in state news for the rest of the program. Well, let's see. On Wednesday, a federal appeals court overturned an injunction on the John Doe 2 investigation into Governor Walker's campaign and conservative groups that were suspected of illegal campaign activity. A federal court issued the original injunction, but the federal appeals court said that this fight belongs in state courts and lifted the injunction. The investigation is still halted because of a state court ruling earlier in the year. Is this your reaction, Margaret Farrow, to the appeals court telling Judge Randa that that he was wrong in stopping or halting that investigation?
Well, I think we see all sorts of iterations of decisions being, you know, reconsidered, overturned, affirmed when we go through the appeal process, whether it's in the state courts or the federal courts. The reason I think the federal court got involved at all and the case was taken to the federal level by those appealing relief from the John Doe investigation was because nothing was happening at the state court level. Generally, you go to the next level if there is something not working right at the level at which you should be at. If something isn't working right at our state level of either prosecution or courts, we end up bouncing one up to say, come on, help here, because the level that immediately should be dealing with it isn't giving us an answer, isn't giving us a reaction to it. So I think there was some, though some were saying, why did it ever get in the federal courts? I think it was there was a reason why it got in the federal courts. Now, having said that, I don't disagree that it should be determined at the state level, which brings us back to the frustration of why isn't that decision being made at the state level? I think many of us are very frustrated that we're not getting an end to it by a ruling of the Supreme Court, and if they decide not to, then it goes back into our appellate level here at the state, and somebody has to say something about it. People have to be aware that our John Doe method of dealing with these things. It's very unique to Wisconsin. Most states have a different method and just go to the grand jury and actually have a huge penalty for letting anything come out in that type of an investigation. And instead, what we've experienced in the unique John Doe process in Wisconsin in this case is the leaking of constant information and names to the press by, you know, can't be sure whom, from the prosecutor's side or whatever. And so it's a long frustration for, I think, a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, your reaction to the federal court ruling, Eugene?
Well, it was another chapter in this lawsuit that just won't die. And as a political observer, I'm just intrigued by the fact that, to get to a very elemental basic level, where there's smoke, there's usually fire. And there seems to be enough smoke that I would love to be able to get a real good idea of what the case is against the people that the prosecutors and the John Doe seem to be convinced performed some kind of illegal action. That's what we want to know. And we want to know how close it comes to the governor, if it comes close to him at all. But I think all of this brushback against the John Doe, claiming that somehow because one judge who seemed to be an activist, partisan judge, decided he was going to throw the whole thing out, random, I'm talking about, that in itself was a sign to a lot of people that there's something not right here, because you can't just claim the prosecutors have an axe to grind or a political, because I tell you, there are a lot of people sitting in prison convicted now who will say, oh, my prosecutor had it out for me. He was, biased against me. So that doesn't seem to me to be a valid excuse to stop things. I think the people of Wisconsin want to get answers, and the answers we're getting are these sort of murky, well, these guys didn't do it the right way, or they're not looking at the right things, instead of just letting people get at this, or maybe an independent commission get at this and find out if the basic allegations are true or not. So I was glad to see it happen, because we're in an election now, and it becomes even more intriguing to have a candidate for governor running for reelection with all this stuff hanging over his head. So I'm talking as a journalist, and for Margaret, I have to say, as a journalist, I don't mind all these leaks and everything to the press, because, I mean, that is doing its job. It's letting people know what's happening in the shadows, in the corners where a lot of these deals get done.
Well,
I think it's important to note there is nothing in this process that is at all, in fact, impacting or is focused on the governor. Everyone has said over and over, Walker is not the target of this. They are not looking for Walker. And I think the sense of what you just expressed, Eugene, is valid in that, even though that's been said, there are people who think, oh, there's got to be some fire there because I see a little smoke here. I think that's the implication. And the state court, within our state circuit courts, the judge immediately beginning this and hearing it has said there's nothing there. And he's the first one that dismissed it. And then it kept going on from there when people didn't accept that answer. And so this is just, I don't know what the District Attorney Chisholm is trying to do with this, but I think, any political science student or professor at some point could write a very interesting book about this process. It's unique.
Well, let's talk about, here's a new story from yesterday. The state's largest police group has endorsed Mary Burke for governor, saying that crime has gone up in Wisconsin due to Governor Walker's budget cuts. So the Wisconsin Police Association endorses Mary Burke over Governor Walker. It did, by the way, endorse Attorney General candidate Schimmel over candidate Happ. But let's talk about that. Is that a surprise, Margaret Farrow, that the Wisconsin Police Association endorses Mary Burke instead of Governor Walker?
I guess I'm not surprised. Jim Palmer, their head, their director, is a very liberal-minded kind of union operative minded person, albeit an attorney, I'm not surprised at all. I don't know what, there are many other groups that are involved in law enforcement, that are endorsing the governor and also, endorsing, the, Brad Schimmel, the Attorney General candidate. I heard it early this morning. I heard a university professor saying you can't say 2 years would make a crime wave, that the actions of any administration, either side of the aisle, something they would do that could within a 2 year period impact crime is very difficult to measure. And he questions this this measurement being a valid one. I think we've done an awful lot of things in this administration, or I shouldn't use the we. This administration has done a lot of things that would be positive, but a lot of it comes down to personal responsibility also, and it's awfully hard to create public policy to change or instill in people a sense of personal responsibility for their actions.
But let me ask you, Margaret, you know, the police association noted a 19% crime increase, which it says outpaces every state in the Midwest except one. Maybe that's Illinois, I don't know.
Well, I guess my question, you can find statistics to back up any argument you want to make. And I would ask 19% increase in what kind of crimes, in overall crimes, in violent crimes, in that I have not seen the news report.
Yeah, FBI statistics on violent crime is what they were citing.
Well, I think we also are solving a lot of those crimes. I think we also are, you know, there are. I think we've got great police forces in the area, and so I guess I'm not buying into that.
Yeah. Eugene.
Well, I guess I can just weigh in on the perspective of a resident of the largest city, Milwaukee, and as African American, there's a lot of concern locally about crime, but I think to take it out of the realm of politics, I think people are looking for answers and solutions, and in Milwaukee, I think they start with the chief of police, and then they go perhaps to the mayor and a lesser degree, the sheriff. But I don't think, you know, the governor's race is really, when you hear a police association has endorsed one of the candidates for governor on a local level here in Milwaukee, I don't think people really pay that much attention to that. They look to our immediate local leaders to try to find a solution to the crime here.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the accusations of plagiarism in the race for governor. Republicans are going after Mary Burke and her campaign for excerpts in her jobs plan that were identical to the jobs plans of other Democratic candidates for governor in other states. Mary Burke yesterday saying she did not plagiarize anything. The consultant that was working with the campaign and writing up that jobs plan, you know, wrote those excerpts, but that's not plagiarizing anything. Eugene, is this much to do about nothing or something that's a big deal?
Well, it's not. They can't be considered nothing because it's a very important gubernatorial election. But I've said from the beginning that people who are jumping on that particular word, plagiarism, are, you know, they need to really check their definitions. Because if you look at the story, the consultant she claims provided this material, which is identical to other jobs plans that this consultant also worked on. The most you can say is that maybe this guy plagiarized himself. And to make that broader and to apply it to Mary Burke, and even more important, to show a sort of political naivety that you think that most of these candidates write their job plans themselves and don't hire people to write it for them, I can't accept that a lot of politically savvy people don't understand that. So it does seem to be like they're trying to stick her with something that sounds almost criminal until you look at the definition of what they're trying to say, and then it falls apart because it's clearly not technically plagiarism. She is the head of that campaign, so she should take responsibility for what's in her jobs plan. But I think, you know, the level at which they're trying to accuse her of plagiarism, which, again, is a definitive term for what something happens, and it doesn't fit the definition.
Mm-hmm. Margaret Farrell?
Well, I guess what bothered me is where are her thoughts? We were, as I understand it, early in the campaign, she was asked for her she was asked for her ideas about jobs, about the economy, and the things that are focused that are those issues that are in people's minds, making this judgment call. And she kept saying with her Harvard education, she was working on it. She was working on it. She was going to bring it out, and it was going to be something she's putting a lot of effort into with her Harvard education, which was often mentioned. Well, what she was doing, apparently, was finding a good person to put something together, someone that her staff told her, this fella knows what he's talking about, he's worked for these other candidates. Unfortunately, most of them lost. And I guess the point that one learns from this, and she certainly has learned, is when you're at the top, the buck stops with you. And I would agree with Eugene. She chose him to do this. She's now got to be responsible for what he did. This isn't unique to Wisconsin. Has she no ideas that are unique to Wisconsin? In this plan, she wants to start doing something about agriculture. Check, Mary, agriculture and the agricultural side of our business community and our business numbers is healthier than it's been in a long time, growing like crazy, both in the food production and food processing area. I'm much more concerned with what she really knows about this state and what her ideas are and how she will react to ideas that she's being presented with. She apparently bought into this, put it out there as hers, and we found out it wasn't out of her Harvard roots. It was out of someone else's mind.
Let me jump in because we are going to run out of time, and I need to ask our listeners the Week in Review quiz question, which is, in the spirit of the so-called world's largest cranberry festival this weekend in Warrens, and in honor of cranberry harvest season, which is going on right now, we want to know which Wisconsin brewery this fall released a cranberry ginger shandy. What Wisconsin brewery has released a beer with it's called the Cranberry Ginger Shandy. 1-800-642-1234. Call in with your guess, your answer. 1-800-642-1234. We are going to have you answer on air, and the first one with the correct answer wins a token of a prize. And while we are waiting for the callers to line up for the Week in Review quiz question, let me ask just very briefly of both Eugene and Margaret. Would you drink a beer, Eugene, with cranberries in it?
Well, first, let me ask: are they an advertiser, or no? Oh, no, you don't have advertisers.
But and actually, I don't think they're an underwriter. So,
yeah. Well, no, it actually sounds kind of nasty to me.
So, and Margaret, are you a fan of cranberry ginger shandy?
Well, I'm a huge fan of cranberries in a lot of things. I guess I'd try it, but I'm not a huge fan of the shandy, type of beer. I don't drink that much beer, but I like the true beer. I'm really a Pilsner beer. So
let's see if Jim in Brookfield has the answer. Jim, do you know what Wisconsin brewery released the cranberry ginger shandy?
Wasn't the Jacob Leinekluger Brewery in Mount Horeb?
Well, it's not in Mount Horeb, but you are correct with the name of the brewery. So you win. Have you tried it, Jim? Is it any good?
Yes, I think it's great, and my wife loves it too.
All right. Well, thanks. Hold on, Jim, because we will get you your prize. We'll get your contact information. Congratulations. Well, I think that's going to do it for this edition of the Week in Review. By the way, we will be having Mary Burke on for our candidate forums for governor on Monday. We'll hear from her at 7:30 on Monday in our state capitol report. We will also hear from two of the so-called minor parties candidates, gubernatorial candidates. Governor Walker declined our invitation to appear on the forum. Eugene Kane and Margaret Farrell, thank you both very much for being with us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.